This is Ronald Coleman, inviting you to radio's most dramatic half hour, Favorite Story. Half a league onward. All in the valley of death rode the 600. Forward the light brigade, charge for the guns, he said. Into the valley of death rode the 600. Well, that's how Alfred Lord Tennyson described the noble and tragic charge of the light brigade. A band of heroes was the light brigade, but perhaps the greatest hero of the Crimean War to come down through history was a heroine, the Lady of the Lamp, Florence Nightingale. She may indeed have bound the wounds of some of the dying 600. Our favorite story this week tells you about Florence Nightingale, the woman. Mr. Robert Young asked us to present this as his favorite story, and the distinguished British actress Edna Best will star as the Lady of the Lamp. Today, nursing is an honored profession, but in Miss Nightingale's time, nurses were little better than menial scrubwomen. And hospitals were a far cry from the immaculate white-walled institutions of today. Yet it was this drab, thankless business of nursing which the young gentlewoman named Florence Nightingale chose as her life work, to the everlasting gratitude of all mankind. And that's our favorite story this week, The Lady of the Lamp.
What did you do then?
Well, we found that the driver had misunderstood my bad French, and he'd taken us halfway back to Paris again.
What an experience.
Oh, Florence, it is good to have you home with us and to sit at the supper table together.
Tell me, whose brilliant idea was it to invite Mark?
It was my own idea. I invited myself.
Oh, I'm so happy that you did. It wouldn't have been a real homecoming without you.
Shall I ring for more tea, Mrs. Sandhurst?
Oh, no, thank you, Mrs. Nightingale. I've had sufficient.
Tell me, Florence, when you were in Italy, did you call on my old friend Count Sforza?
No, Father. The Bracebridges spent 3 days with the Sforzas, but I had to go on an important errand.
An important errand? My dear Florence, what could possibly be more important than calling on Count Sforza?
Well, I paid a short visit to the south of Germany.
Whatever for?
I wanted to visit a school that they have there, on the Rhine. A nursing school for Protestant deaconesses.
Nursing? Nursing, indeed.
Now, Mother, you mustn't be upset.
Why, Florence, why do you suppose we sent you on this journey, if not to get your mind off that hateful subject?
Oh, you may not call it a hateful subject, Mother.
I'd better leave.
No, Mark, please don't go. I'm surprised at you, at all of you. Do you think that I'm a schoolgirl who can be dissuaded from something by a mere change of air? Do you think my interest in nursing is a whim, a fancy?
It's been a source of great pain to your mother.
I don't want to run your life, Florence. But why must you choose an interest so repelling, so ugly, so menial? Nursing is no business for the well-bred daughter of a well-to-do family. Why, it's not respectable.
Is it not respectable to help people who are in pain, people who cannot help themselves?
You know my feeling. I will not argue about the subject.
But, Mother,
No, I will not hear another word. I have prayed, Florence, every night that you've been away, that you'd come back to us with refined, genteel interests. It is not ladylike to be interested in sickness and ugliness and disease. Oh, it seems I was wrong. Oh,
what do you want to make of me, a shallow do-nothing who spends her days trying on dresses and going to parties? I would rather die.
Florence.
I would, Father, I would rather die. I'm sorry if I displease you. But somehow, I think that God expects more of us than our own enjoyment. This is a good world he's given us, a rich and beautiful world. And as thanks for all this, I think we're expected to make the world a little better.
By living graciously.
Oh, Mother, that is not enough.
Oh, I don't know what we're going to do with her. I don't know. Where have we fallen short?
There, there now, Mother.
What have we done wrong?
Lie down for a
minute. How has she come to be this way? Get
overwrought. Well, Mark, I seem to have exceeded in one thing. I have convinced my parents that they have the most ungrateful daughter in all England.
You disappoint me too, Florence.
Then my record is complete. You don't approve of my interest in nursing, do you, Mark?
I came here tonight thinking, as your parents did, that the voyage must have changed you. And I plan to ask you a question. But I see there's no need to ask it now. Good night, Florence.
Oh, no, wait, Mark. I'll walk to the gate with you. Oh, look. How bright the Little Dipper is. I think the stars shine more brilliantly in England than anywhere else in the world. Don't you?
Oh, Florence. The stars revolve, and so does the world, and we become old before the spring.
True.
Will you marry me, darling? I promise you a good life. No worries, Florence. Nothing for you to do but be beautiful and be loved.
And be useless.
Oh, for the love of heaven, Florence, what do you want? Do you propose to become a hospital scrub woman, a maid of all work for the halt and the blind?
Is that such a disappointment to you?
It isn't the life I've pictured for my wife.
I love you, Mark. And that is why I cannot spoil the picture for you.
Nightingale, how in the name of heaven did you get here so quickly? You must have flown through the air.
Well, I merely...
Mr. Herbert, begging your pardon, sir, you'd better sign this immediately.
What? Oh, the deployment of troops along the Turkish frontier. Yes, yes, yes.
And Mr. Secretary, Sir Admiral Greaves has been waiting 30 minutes to discuss routes of supply for the main
convoy. Mr. Herbert, perhaps it would be better if I came another time. I'll leave.
Leave? After all the trouble I've had locating you. Come into my office, Miss Nightingale.
Mr. Secretary, Colonel Belknap must see you immediately.
Then he'll have to wait. I shall be in conference with Miss Nightingale and cannot be disturbed. Not even for the Prime Minister himself. Oh. Sit down, Miss Nightingale. Oh, it's good to see you. I'm still correct in calling you Miss?
Yes. I have not married.
That's an incredible achievement in itself for a woman of your beauty. Do you know why I sent for you?
You sent for me?
Yes, you got my message.
Why, no.
Well, then why are you here?
Mr. Herbert, I have been reading the dreadful things they say in the newspapers, and I thought possibly I could be of some help.
Oh, dear Florence, you've grown older since we used to be neighbors, but your heart hasn't changed. I remember when you were a little girl, I used to watch you taking care of broken dolls and mending the other children's playthings and putting splints and bandages on them.
You remember the talks that we used to have, Mr. Herbert, about the goodness of helping others when they were sick or injured.
Never could make your parents see our point, could we?
They still don't.
Well, Florence, we're at a time now in the history of England where more people need more help than ever before.
Is it true what happened after the Battle of Alma?
It's all too true. Hundreds of men who should be alive today will never come home again, because there were almost no medical provisions. Tragic aftermath of victory. Of course, I have to take the blame for it as Secretary for War.
The Times said there were not enough surgeons, no nurses at all, no linen for dressings and bandages. Oh, Mr. Herbert, how could such a thing happen?
You can't explain what happens in a war. Men and rules break down on the battlefield. Our generals are competent enough as generals, I suppose, but I'm not altogether certain that they qualify as human beings.
You said that you sent for me. What is it you want me to do?
Florence, I need someone to go out there to the Crimea. Oh. Someone who knows about nursing and health and the care of the sick.
Since you are our neighbor, Mr. Herbert, I have learned many things. I have studied with the Sisters of St. Vincent de Paul in their hospital in Alexandria, and I spent 4 months with Dr. Fliedner in Germany.
Then you are precisely the person, the one person to take charge of hospital conditions in the Crimea.
But there may be one disadvantage. I am a woman.
So is Victoria. This is a woman's work. Will your family object?
When do you wish me to leave?
God bless you, Florence. 10,000 suffering soldiers will thank you for your humanity.
Now, I must stay in London long enough to arrange for all the medical supplies. And I shall need to take some nurses with me. 30 or 40 at least.
I shall arrange at once for your transportation to our military base at Eupatoria. Aren't you afraid, Florence?
I am terrified. But wars are terrifying for everyone, Mr. Secretary. And there is a task to be done. Mark, I have come to say goodbye.
So you're off to the wars with your petticoat brigade, eh?
There is nothing else for me to do. I am needed in the Crimea.
From the latest news, I think we're all needed in the Crimea. If the war's to be won, well, this should cure you.
Or kill me, as the saying goes.
Why can't you be like other women, Florence? Why must you put yourself at the head of a crusade? You know what you're getting into. There'll be nothing but filth and stench, cold and bad food and blood and fear.
It will be no worse for me than for the others.
There's no hope of dissuading you.
None.
Then Godspeed, both of us.
Both?
You have your work to do, Florence, and I have mine.
Of women? 38 of them? Gad, what's the army coming to? Haven't we enough trouble in the Crimea with the Turks and the Cossacks without bothering our heads with a grist of jabbering females? Well, send them back.
Mr. Purveyor General.
Are you the commander-in-chief of this long skirts brigade?
I am Florence Nightingale. I have been ordered here by Mr. Sidney Herbert, Her Majesty's Secretary for War, to assist in the care of the wounded.
Oh, so those infernal newspapermen got the whole of England stirred up, I suppose, after the battle at Alma. And you're the answer. Miss Nightingale, is that your name? Cabbage heads in the War Office don't know what war is like down here.
If you will allow
me... Don't you realize they packed you off as a gesture to appease the irritation of the British people after the press got them all riled up? War correspondents, troublemakers, all of them. Well, don't you understand? You can go back. You and your other petticoats, don't even unpack your luggage. I'll have consigned immediately to shipboard. Oh, Lieutenant,
Mr.
have their luggage...
Mr. Purveyor General... I have not traveled 3,000 miles with my staff of nurses, merely to be sent back like a bad child who has run away from home.
Oh, you haven't. Well, I'm in command here.
You do not command me. I have authorization from the War Office to perform a task here. And not you, nor the combined military might of Turkey and the Tsar, can stop me from performing it.
Well, really?
Lieutenant, my ladies and I shall require some help in finding our quarters. Will you assign some men to help us? Look sharp, please.
Now, the second act of Robert Young's favorite story, The Lady of the Lamp, starring Edna Best as Florence Nightingale. The fearful Crimean War labored on. A war without reason, except that it had started and no one knew exactly how to stop it. The Light Brigade charged, cannon to right of them, cannon to left of them, cannon in front of them, and perished. And the little troop of nurses from England set about the serious business of saving lives. By sunlight and by lamplight, they worked in the makeshift hospital wards.
Give me the bucket and the brush.
Oh, I can finish. I'm not too tired.
No, give it to me, Sister Caroline. I will finish cleaning this floor.
You must be as weary as I am, Miss Nightingale.
Oh, there are many ways to be weary. To be tired in the body, that is nothing, sister. I am only concerned when we grow tired in our hearts. Now, words will not clean thoughts. I'll finish this.
Nurse!
What is the matter, soldier? Go to sleep. Rest.
I can't rest. Oh, it hurts.
Where does it hurt you?
My side. My side.
Let me look. Why? This one. bandage should have been changed days ago. How long has it been since they dressed this wound?
I don't remember. It hurts.
Caroline, Caroline, have none of the dressings been changed in this ward?
There are no new bandages to redress them.
And why are there no new bandages?
None have been brought in.
You have reported this
several times.
And 100 wounds fester because medical supplies are not brought in. Believe me, there will be clean bandages tomorrow. Mr. Purveyor General. I demand to know why no clean dressings have been delivered to the supply rooms of our hospital barracks.
And I demand to know why you interrupt me at my work in my office.
Because this is your work. You are charged with the responsibility of supplying this army with its needs.
My responsibility, madam, not yours.
Quantities of medical supplies are aboard ships at dock less than half a mile from here. Why have they not been unloaded?
Because the shipping orders have not been properly authorized. These supplies came here through the most unusual channels.
Granted. Most of those supplies, General, were purchased by me from my own private income in England and through the generosity of certain of my friends. They have not come through the customary channels. They have no military purchase order.
Then this port cannot touch them.
And what will become of the supplies?
Well, they will be shipped back to England, naturally.
Along with the corpses which will result from your stupidity?
Will you leave this office?
I will not leave. In the months that I have been here in the Crimea, Mr. Purveyor General, I have met with nothing but scorn and pig-headedness from this department.
Look here.
In every way, General, you have sought to block me and prevent me from bringing aid to the sick and wounded men who need my help. If not my help, help from someone.
Great saints in heaven, woman, have you no reverence for the army regulations?
None whatsoever, when those regulations cause unnecessary suffering and death.
You may not know this, Miss Nightingale, but wars and armies are run by regulations.
I have no right to comment, sir. But if this war and this army are intended to display the quality of our regulations, we are utter fools to abide by them. I have never in my entire life seen a group of so-called intelligent men so thoroughly befouled by red tape, outworn tradition, petty vanity, and blind stubbornness. There is more order in Bedlam.
But I have no authority to land those supplies.
Very well, then. But you have no authority to stop me from landing.
But I do.
I defy you to exercise it. I am not fool enough to ask for your help. I merely ask you, sir, to withhold your hindrance.
I shall do my duty and abide by regulations.
May God pity you. Lieutenant. Lieutenant, will you come in here, please?
Did you call me, madam?
Pay no attention to her.
Lieutenant, you are to order your men to unload the schooner Kaiserworth, which is at berth 49. Have the supplies transported to our hospital warehouse.
On whose authority?
On my authority.
If you so much as move one crate from the hold of that ship, Lieutenant, you will be called before court-martial.
I ask you to risk the court-martial, Lieutenant. Look. Look through this window. Do you see the billets along that ridge in the moonlight? The sleeping men there are sick or injured. Your comrades, Lieutenant, you might be one of them. Without these supplies, dozens of those men will not live to moonrise tomorrow. With the aid of these supplies, God may see fit to let them return in health to England. In the name of humanity, I beg you to do as I ask.
Madam, if you will get yourself some rest, I promise that the supplies will be at your disposal when you wake in the morning.
God bless you, Lieutenant.
Miss Nightingale. Must we leave these men out here in the open?
There's no room inside. And not enough tents. I had no idea there would be so many coming from the battlefield.
Oh, it must have been a dreadful slaughter.
We must do what we can. Bring blankets, sister. I am afraid the starlight will not keep them warm. Cover this lad. His uniform's torn to shreds.
Yes, Miss Nightingale.
Here. Hold my lamp while I bandage this wound.
Yes.
Poor boy. He's lost so much blood. Hold on. Hold on, Sergeant. If you get through this night, the rest will be easy. Now be brave.
Oh, God save you, ma'am. God save you, ma'am.
And you can give this blanket to someone else, Caroline. This boy will not need it any longer.
Rest in peace.
Lady. Lady with the lamp.
Yes?
May I have a sip of water, please?
I'm so thirsty.
My throat.
Mark. Mark Sandhurst.
Is it
possible?
Is it the lamplight, or do you have a halo?
Oh, lie down, lie back. Sister, the canteen.
Who is it?
An old friend. Oh, Mark. Drink this. Mark, when did you come here? I didn't know.
Florence.
Yes, it is Florence. Oh, don't try to raise your head. Rest. Lie back.
Oh, look. Right above our heads. There's the little dip of Florence. It's upside down. It's shining almost as brightly as it does at home.
Mark.
When shall we be married, Florence? When will you give up those dreadful ideas about...
Oh, sister, cover him carefully. I'm going to get help.
Dr. Blakely says he's in a very bad way.
Oh, no.
Possible internal injuries. Calls for an operation immediately.
Oh.
Does he mean a great deal to you?
We were once engaged to be married.
I have a plan, Miss Nightingale. A fast steamer leaves just before dawn. It will be in England in 10 days. I'll get the roster changed and have Mark Sandhurst put on board. That way we can get him to England at once for expert surgery.
No. No, it is not fair.
What?
50,000 other women are waiting for their soldiers to come back. And why should my soldier go before the others, no, Lieutenant? Mr. Sandhurst's name must not go on that roster. He must wait his turn. But tell them that...
Miss Nightingale, what's the matter?
So warm. If...
Madam, you're burning with fever. You should be in bed. Sister, doctor, Miss Nightingale is ill.
We've got to hurry, Miss Nightingale. We haven't much time.
Ever since I came back to England, Lord Herbert, I have been waiting for this boat train. I must meet it.
Our next engagement is rather important, too.
Oh, it cannot be more important than this.
Oh, but some of your patients being brought back from the Crimea.
Yes, one particular patient. I should never have left him.
You know perfectly well, Florence, that you were a very sick woman. Why, if we'd not brought you back immediately, we might have lost
you. They're coming. They're coming in from the train.
How many of these lads do you think would be coming home if it weren't for you? Half as many, I dare say.
Miss Nightingale.
Oh, Sister Caroline, where is Mark? How is he?
Miss Nightingale, I did everything I could. I tended him every moment.
Oh.
But the voyage was so rough. And Mr. Sandhurst is...
No.
We did everything. We all tried. We tried to do as you would have done, Miss Nightingale. But he slipped away. Forgive me.
How can I forgive you, sister? For what is not your fault? No tears, please, Caroline. I know that you did your best. Now, Lord Herbert, it seems that my business here is completed. Where is our next engagement?
Miss Nightingale, we are expected at Buckingham Palace.
Lord Herbert.
Your Majesty, may I present Miss Florence Nightingale?
Your Majesty.
It is a great satisfaction for us to welcome you home to these shores and to convey to you the gratitude of all our empire. We know of no person within this island for the past 100 years who has voluntarily encountered dangers so imminent in so pure a spirit of duty towards God and compassion for man. Miss Nightingale, your queen and your countrymen, thank you. Are those tears, Miss Nightingale? They told us that you never wept.
Your Majesty, one can endure great happiness or great sadness when each comes alone. But when they come together...
Oh, Florence, your lamp brought light to so many in that dark corner of the world. Why did the shadow have to fall on you?
God's will be done.
This has been our favorite story impression of one of the world's greatest women, Florence Nightingale. Robert Young suggested the story, Jerome Lawrence and Robert E. Lee dramatized it, and Edna Best gave us a memorable performance as the Lady of the Lamp. It will be mystery time next week, and our favorite story will be one that Alexander Wolcott considered the best whodunit ever written. The distinguished playwright, Mr. Russell Krauss, chose it as his favorite story, The Moonstone, by Wilkie Collins. What is the Moonstone? Well, perhaps the largest diamond in the world, worshipped in India as the all-seeing eye of the goddess of the moon. Now, what happens to the Moonstone and to those who touch it are things you'll find out on Favorite Story next week. We hope you'll be listening.